are going to be several specific documents we're going to be working from. She's going to point those out. I encourage this council to pull those separately so that they're available during the discussion. And my understanding of our discussion today is to review the proposed alternatives. I have some comments at the end of that review as to the place we may. There are several decisions we need to make relative to how we proceed from here. And I would also point out that the staff has laid out the document in a manner that has a reference sheet that will help us to make those decisions or make decisions as we proceed through the document. I'm going to encourage us to have the staff provide the entire explanation first. In other words, the explanation of all of the alternatives. And then there are questions that need to be addressed on some of them, and I would encourage us to come back to those once the complete explanation of the document has been made.
Good morning. Okay, as usual, there are a lot of documents behind tab number 4 for scallops. I'm going to just take a few minutes to say a sentence or two about each of them so you understand what you have before you, and then also identify a few that have been handed out a little bit later so to reduce some confusion. Okay, there are over 15 documents behind tab number 4. The first one is the draft list of alternatives. This is the document we will be spending the most time with today, so you definitely want to have that handy. And we'll go through it probably section by section after I go through all the other documents. Document number 2, not going to really say too much about. There's actually 2A and 2B. These are two meeting summaries from the advisory panel meetings that we had. The reason I'm not going to go through them at this stage is we spent a lot of time going through them at the committee level. They're here really just for your reference. Excuse me, if you wanted to see some of the background about how certain things were developed. This was the general category advisors met the first day, and basically their main task was to iron out qualification criteria alternatives. And then on the second day, we had a joint meeting of both the advisory panels. This was the first meeting of its kind. It was very successful from talking to the people involved and the people in the audience. Surprisingly, there was a lot of consensus on a lot of really tough issues. Everyone was working hard, and there's a summary kind of halfway through that's titled 2B. So that's really just for your reference. Document number 3 is a meeting summary that Andy has already summarized this morning about the first scallop survey advisory panel meeting, so I won't really get into that. Document number 4, again, is really just for your reference. That is a meeting summary from our PDT meeting, and you can see in bold there were several consensus statements passed by the PDT, but again, I'm not really going to take time to go through them because this was completely vetted through the committee meeting, and we did go through each of these things, and you'll see through the document certain ideas that were forwarded from the PDT and so forth. But if you want a little bit more detail, you can refer to this document. Kind of covers that meeting. The next document is document number 5. This is a review of the 2-day scallop committee meeting, and from its length, you can see that it was a very a long 2 days. But the committee did get through everything. The first day, we had a lot of reports and summaries and kind of got into some of the hard qualification issues. And then the second day was kind of a wrap-up of anything that was left unresolved in this amendment. And you can kind of go through here. Again, I wasn't really planning to spend a lot of time going through these very specific motions. I think there's something like 40 of them because they are all incorporated into the main draft list of alternatives. So unless people have questions or want to refer to this summary to get a better understanding of the background, that's why it's been provided for you. But again, you kind of flip through and see all the hard work done at the committee level. Document number 6 is another one you might want to pull out of your binder and use during the day. This is, if you will, a Cliff Notes version of the alternatives document, kind of your cheat sheet, and it's just basically a table with a description of the measures, a brief sentence about what they are. And then in the right-hand column, we've tried to identify a few of the issues that may be outstanding related to some of the alternatives that the council may want to consider discussing today. We do have an FMAT, just to remind you. This is the first FMAT, is that Fishery Management Action Team. primarily council staff and NIMS staff, getting together, trying to primarily go over administrative or issues related to developing amendments. And we did have a meeting subsequent to the committee meeting, and a lot of the issues that the FMAT discussed are highlighted in that column to kind of help the council in developing their final alternatives. So as we go through the document, documents number one, you can kind of use document six to help you, and you get a sense of some of the outstanding issues in that column on the right. Document number seven was handed out during this meeting, and this is, depending how detailed everyone wants to get today, this is a document that was put together primarily from work that Demet Haxover and our staff has been working on, and it first explains, as you might recall from the April Council meeting, I let you know that we have been noticing some data issues related to the general category data. A lot of work has been done on this since the April Council meeting. There's a small team of people working at the regional office, kind of culling through all of this data, cleaning it up and so forth, and there's a description of what's been done so far and where we are with that in this document on the first page. And then through the rest of that document is sort of a brief summary with several tables to give you a sense of, you know, based on the data, the number of boats that we expect would qualify under the different qualification alternatives, as well as a summary of their total landings to give you a sense of all the different alternatives in front of you and what those, who those would potentially qualify. So again, as we go through the qualification alternatives, I can go through parts of this document if you'd wish to give you a better sense of the details. There's also some tables in there about allocation, and just to kind of give you a preview, there's several alternatives the committee is forwarding in terms of strategies for allocation, whether they are individual fishing quotas or a tiered system with several different permit types. There are tables in here that give you an idea of, depending on which strategy you go with, the number of participants for each of those tiers, for example, and what their potential allocations could be under different scenarios. It's very complicated because there's a lot of balls up in the air at the same time in terms of how many boats are we talking about, how many pounds are we talking about. We don't know the total projected tack yet, so there's really a lot. And the final DSEIS that you'll review later in the fall will have many more tables in terms of different scenarios and under different situations for MSY and so forth. Turning to page six, there are some tables on that page just for you to kind of have for reference. We discussed already this morning about the different ranges of MSY and how that could potentially affect some of the decisions you're making today. So we tried to put in a few tables just really for some background information to give you a sense of the different total TACs and the different percentage alternatives that are under consideration and what that would mean for a general category tack, as well as potentially a different individual allocation based on the alternatives in the document. So again, we can revisit this document. Oh, the last thing I want to point out on page 7, this is some preliminary analysis. There is some alternatives in the document, if you recall, about permitting or continuing to permit limited access vessels to fish under general category rules. And this section on page 7, there's a few preliminary tables about the number of vessels that we expect to qualify under the different alternatives for that sector of the fleet. So again, we can revisit this document during the day if you want to get into some more of the details, but I will point them out as we go through the document section by section. Document 8, we've already covered. There was a revised document handed out as well. This was from the SSC, which Chris has already covered. Document number 9 is a package of several correspondence we have received since the last council meeting, and there are 5 individual letters included in this packet. And you can see on the cover there's a list of who the author of each letter was. In general, a lot of the comments had to do with kind of things overall in terms of the process of Amendment 11. There were more specific comments, but the committee has gone through all of these and tried to incorporate these issues into the alternatives, which you'll see in the document, but these letters are here for your background. I will point out the last letter, the last bullet there, we are probably or definitely going to address at the end of this meeting It's related to a trawl sweep issue, and there's a letter in this packet as well as a memo from Paul Howard later in the package, which kind of gets into that in more detail, and the council should kind of remember to get back to that at the end of the meeting. Oh, I'm sorry. The memo from Paul is right behind this. Document number 10 is sort of staff pulling together the actual regulations that this letter is referring to and some rationale from Amendment 4 to kind of help with that discussion, but we'll cover that later this afternoon. Moving on, Document 11 is just a copy of the final rule for Framework 18. This was published on June 8th. So this is really just for your reference, so you have it, details of the regulations that have been implemented. Not really planning to discuss those issues today. And again, document number 12 is a summary letter from the agency letting the council know that Framework 18 has been published, and that's just a quick summary of what was published. Document number 13 is some additional correspondence we got since the mailing, and this is another letter from an individual from Delaware, just some general comments about Amendment 11, some things you may want to consider, including for the range of alternatives. Document number 14 is actually the list of alternatives that the committee has considered and rejected. Again, these aren't things that the council has considered and rejected at this stage, but after this meeting, it would be considered that the council has reviewed these and decided to consider and reject them, but they would also be included in the document under that section. I do apologize. There are two. I was reviewing the meeting summary recently since the mailing, and there are two items that I neglected to add into here that were actually pretty formally considered as an alternative and rejected by the committee. And I'll just point them out now so we don't forget. You'll see that this document, this section is set up similar to the table of contents for the entire document. So there are considered and rejected alternatives for many of the sections. And if you just flip to page, it says 35 on the bottom, toward the end of the packet, under section 1.4.1.7, related to allocation between the limited access and general category fisheries. The one that I meant to include that hasn't been is another alternative that would probably be numbered section 1.4.1.7.2. There was an alternative considered at the committee level and discussed at the advisory panel meetings about an alternative that if the projected TAC was over a certain amount, that and it was specified at 60 million pounds, then the difference above 60 million pounds would be split actually evenly between the general category and limited access sector. And this was an alternative that was discussed, but the committee decided not to forward it as an alternative, but put it in the considered and rejected. So I just wanted to point that out. I apologize for not getting that in there. And the second one that I would add is on the last page under incidental catch measures. You may want to jot down for the final, I'll make this into the actual document, but section 1.4.1.8.3, you may want to add at the very end. The committee also did discuss an alternative, but the motion failed, to consider basically leaving the incidental catch permit as it is, but have an exception for vessels, multi-species vessels involved in the SAP program. And this was a motion, I think it failed 2-3, with two abstentions at the committee meeting. And this was discussed as one potential alternative under incidental catch that has been moved to the considered and rejected section. But other than that, hopefully I haven't forgotten any others. The committee can help me. But that's sort of where we are with the alternatives that they've considered and rejected at this point. Moving on to document 15, this Chris Kellogg has already covered as well. This is the memo from Paul related to the scallop MSY. So the only two last things I want to mention that were handed out this morning are two additional correspondence we received during this council meeting. The first one should have been at your binder this morning. It is a letter from David Frula and the Fishery Survival Fund, so maybe four pages long, related to some comments they have and suggestions for Amendment 11 alternatives. And the second one is a two-page letter from Andy Keyes and Elaine Inman. And this is related as well to Amendment 11 alternatives, specifically the control date and issues around qualification. So these are hopefully all of the documents that we'll need to get through today. But again, spending most time with document number one and then your sort of cliff note version, document number six.
Okay, thank you for that. What I think I'm going to do, you'll be ready to go through the alternatives. What I think I'll do is take a checkout break now, come back. When you get, we'll go through the alternatives. And as time allows, well, we should be done long before lunch with that. I'll go to the public comment on people that, anything that people want to put in, rather than commenting on every motion or the change in motions, because it gets very difficult on when to comment. If a particular motion doesn't come up for you, we're going to take a period so that people can come up, and that'll be right after you do the alternatives, after questions from the council. Paul?
Just, and it might be good at this point to, what is the purpose of this SCOLLET meeting? And in other words, it's the purpose now is to approve alternatives for the DSEIS that takes an awful long time to develop. Will there be opportunities, and this is what the public would know, to develop further alternatives after this meeting?
No.
Yes.
I was surprised you were asking me for the answer, actually. But, yeah, the ideal situation is that the council reviews the list before you from the committee, discuss any potential ones to include or remove, and if the council's comfortable at the end of today, they would submit this as a final list of alternatives to be analyzed over the summer, and then we would bring that document back to the council in November for hopefully selection of a preferred alternative, and we would not have many meetings in between to add alternatives after today.
When we leave today, that's it. So. All right, we'll take a checkout break, be back by with that. So documents 6 and 7 are in the back of the audience package. The council should have them in order. Okay. Go ahead, Dee.
Okay, so I guess we're going to just go section by section. If you take out document number 1, and you may also want to have document number 6 on the side. The first page of document number 1 is really just a table of contents, give you a sense of the growing list of alternatives for this action. So the first two or three pages is the table of contents. Starting on page 4 is where the description of alternatives starts. The number one goal for this action, to remind you, is to control capacity and mortality in the general category scallop fishery. Underneath that goal, of course, we will analyze the no action. And then also the majority of the alternatives for this action are related to developing and implementing a limited entry program, which is actually also objective number 2 of Amendment 11. So within the limited entry program that's kind of put forward in this document, the committee at this stage is recommending 2 different qualification criteria alternatives, 2 different qualification time periods, and then once you have that universe of vessels, they're recommending considering 3 ways to actually calculate the individual contribution per vessel, and I'll get into that in more detail, but there'd be 3 different ways to determine that. And then you could also consider 4 different ways to actually allocate that portion of the resource to the general category qualifiers. So you can see it's a pretty involved matrix of alternatives before you, and we'll just go through them one at a time. The first one is actually the qualification criteria, section 1.1.2.1. And underneath there, the committee discussed this for a decent amount of time at the 2-day committee meeting. And at the end, it was decided that the committee is very serious, as well as the council, in using the control date. So both of the alternatives for qualification include that a vessel would have to have had a general category permit before the control date. So the first alternative is utilizing the permit before the control date, as well as a vessel has to show that they had 1 trip of 100 pounds during the qualification time period. So that's basically the first alternative. To give you a sense, based on the preliminary data, if you just use those two criteria, somewhere around 400 to 550 vessels would qualify, and that range depends on the time period that's selected. So the shorter time period would give you around 400 vessels, and the longer time period is something around 550. So that's the first alternative. The second alternative is the utilization of the control date plus annual landings in any one year during the qualification period of 1,000 pounds. So those are basically the two alternatives. And to give you a sense of the number of vessels that would qualify under that second alternative, the range is smaller. It's something about 277 vessels to 370 vessels. So that's the difference there being that this is a slightly more restrictive qualification alternative, being 1,000 pounds for the year. So those are the two alternatives. I'll maybe go through the time period alternatives as well as the next section, and maybe we can take a break if anyone has questions. Section 1.1.2.2 is related to the qualification time period alternatives. Again, the committee is forwarding two alternatives. The first one is a shorter time period, which a vessel would have to show this qualification during all of fishing year 2003 and part of the fishing year 2004, but only through the control date. And just to be clear, originally this alternative included landings through all of 2004 fishing year, but the committee discussed this at their meeting, and they were more comfortable submitting this time period only through the control date to be consistent with the control date criterion that they had in the earlier motion. So this is actually a full fishing year plus 8 months of a second fishing year would be the first alternative. The second alternative is a longer time series. So if a vessel could show that they had 100 pounds or 1,000 pounds annually during any fishing years from 2000, so this is almost five fishing years, and the last fishing year again is truncated at the control date. So that's a longer time series. Those are the two alternatives submitted so far. During scoping and the development of this document, there was a longer time series actually from 1994 through the control date or through all of 2004, and this has been moved to the considered and rejected section, which you can see from document 14, a list of the considered and rejected alternatives. The committee is not submitting that as an alternative for the document. The next section, section 1.1.2.3, again, these three alternatives are related to, once you know the universe of vessels that would qualify under the different alternatives, the idea with this is you kind of take their individual landings, and in order to determine that vessel's contribution to the overall general category sector, there's different ways you can basically determine that value. And the first alternative would basically be just to take their best year of landings from the data and say whatever their best year was, that would be their contribution. And their allocation would be based on that. And again, keep in mind that if 2004 was their best year, that would be truncated for the control date. So their best year would actually only be 8 months. The second alternative in this section is taking an average of their best 3 years. And again, you basically take, the idea with this alternative would be to give some sort of consideration for vessels that have been in this fishery longer than 1 or 2 years. So you take their best 3 years and you average them together, and that would be their contribution. When the FMAT met to review these alternatives, and I have this kind of in boldface on the middle of page 6 under this alternative. This alternative is a little awkward the way it's currently worded in terms of how does this work with the alternative that's only 2 years, for example. What the analysis has done so far is basically just average the 2 years is what we've done for now. I don't think at the committee level, you know, with so much going on at once, we really kind of stood back and said, oh, well, how will this work with the shorter time period? So the analysis so far has just taken the 2 years and averaged them together. If the council's comfortable with that, we can just interpret it as what that alternative is supposed to be. But if you go back to document number 6, this is one of the highlighted notes in the right-hand column as something that council may want to consider as a refinement for this alternative. and it's related to some technical advice from the FMAT suggesting as possibly another alternative for this type of section as an average of the years during the qualification time period, just to sort of clarify that issue. If the council desires to kind of add another alternative or change the wording of that one, that's sort of a suggestion from the FMAT at this stage that it could help this alternative be a little bit more clear. The third alternative is related to a weighting system, and the committee spent a lot of time talking about this, and they were presented with several examples of how vessels' landings history could be weighted. And the main rationale behind this type of strategy would be that there are some participants that have been in this fishery for a longer amount of time, and should they be given some sort of weighted advantage almost to a vessel that has only fished 1 year. So this alternative would look at all the same landings and basically weight them, and the committee, their policy direction to the analyst was to give higher weights to more recent years. We didn't get into specific weighting amounts, and we did go ahead and assign some weights, but certainly assigning weights is a policy decision, and from the committee what we did is we took their motion to weigh the more recent years higher, and that's what we went ahead and did. So we basically, for the two different time periods, gave higher weight to more recent years, the idea of that to give more consideration for recent participation and investment and so forth, to reduce impacts on those vessels. So that really does it for the three different alternatives for how to determine a vessel's qualification amount. I just want to point out so people understand how this, we hope this works. You basically take a vessel's individual landings and their contribution to the general category sector as a whole. You figure that out in pounds. But as we know, we're not going to allocate an amount of pounds to each vessel the same every single year. The sector as a whole is going to get a percent of the total. So that kind of contribution for each individual vessel is going to vary year to year depending on the amount of pounds available to that sector. So it's not a constant poundage per vessel. It's going to scale up and down depending on the amount of pounds available. So while these different strategies, you know, are very complicated and so forth, you should not have the misunderstanding that it's an actual poundage allocation. It's definitely going to be scaled depending on the total tack of the scallop fishery as well as the allocation decision the council would have to make, basically 2.5% or 11. It's definitely going to vary. So I'll move on to the allocation alternatives, and I think after that it would be a good time to take a break and see if there are any questions. Section 1.1.2.4. So now if there's this universe of vessels and we know their individual contributions to the general category sector, now basically the document gets into different strategies that could be used to actually allocate that resource. So the first alternative is a straight across the board individual fishing quota alternative. So every vessel would have a particular contribution that they had to the fishery during the qualification time period, and they would be allocated a scaled amount in pounds. At this point, the committee's not submitting that an alternative be considered to allocate in trips at this point, so everything is in terms of pounds, and that's basically the first alternative. The second alternative is similar, that it's an individual fishing quota. However, the difference of this alternative is that there's two different permit types, so it would be understood that a vessel would qualify, and then based on sort of a second qualification, they would either qualify for a part-time permit or a full-time permit. And if you qualify for a part-time permit, the possession limit under this alternative is recommended to be 200 pounds per trip rather than 400 pounds per trip. Just a quick background about that. The idea being that input from the advisors, their idea was that most vessels that would qualify for this part-time permit most likely are more your bycatch fisheries that aren't typically landing more than 200 pounds per trip. So that was the idea behind it. Originally, the advisors actually submitted that this sector should be under a hard tack. So the part-time permits would have a hard tack of a fleet, you know, for that component of the fishery that would be They would have a 200-pound possession limit, but not individual allocations. However, that came up at the committee meeting, and it was suggested there could be monitoring issues and other problems. So actually, the committee's suggestion is to leave it as an individual fishing quota for both permit types rather than having part of the fishery be under a hard tack and part of the fishery be under an individual fishing quota. The third alternative is actually a tiered permit system, similar to the limited access fishery, where a vessel would qualify for a different tier. And there are three tiers that were identified originally from the advisors, but again, they have pointed out since then that they do not favor a tiered system, but, you know, understand that for NEPA purposes and for the document, there should be different ideas. So they did submit a tiered approach, and they have suggested several different breakdowns for the three different tiered permits based on annual landings. And originally, the advisors kind of combined it. If you'll see on page 8 is a description of the details of that alternative. And the tiers are suggested in pounds and or trips. And the committee reviewed this as well and decided to leave it alone and submit it. The PDT and the FMAT have reviewed these alternatives since the committee meeting and would only suggest, and you can see this comment is incorporated in the columns in document number 6, that it is slightly problematic, or I should say problematic, to have a criteria that includes pounds and or trips. When we tried to simulate this, just to give a sense of the number of boats that would qualify for each tier, we ran into problems of having both together. So the recommendation actually from the PDT and the FMAT is to separate these out and have an alternative that is based on pounds and have an alternative based on trips, if that's what the council desires to do. But putting them together is problematic for several reasons. The first one is, you know, how do you define a trip? Certainly the PDT can, you know, make a recommendation, a certain poundage that would be counted as a trip, but you run into problems. Is you end up having a vessel that maybe had 70 trips of 10 pounds, and they'll end up in tier number one just because they had, you know, many trips. So there was a lot of problems when we actually went through the process of trying to figure out who was in which tier. So the recommendation is either to eliminate the trips or to separate them out. The next alternative, which starts on the bottom of page 8, is also an individual fishing quota, but it's different than the earlier ones in that this one is more of an individual transferable quota. And there's other components of this that are a little different as well, so I'll just explain it a little bit more. I'm calling this one a standalone alternative as well because the committee kind of developed this one separately, not just under the allocation discussion, and it has several other components that make it a little bit different than the other strategies. So we'll just go through. There's a bulleted list of the intent that the committee's trying to get through with this alternative that's spill on to page number 9. But in the end, the idea behind this is that actually many limited access general category permits would be awarded to anyone that had a permit from 2000 through the control date, regardless if they had landings. So this is the big difference between this alternative. So whether you had landings or not, you would be given a permit if you had a permit during that time period. To give you a sense, of the discrete number of permits from 2000 to the control date, there's roughly 3,500 permits. Okay, so 3,500 permits for this alternative would be awarded, but you would only actually have access to the fishery if you had landings history. So it would be similar to the other alternatives that only the vessels that had some sort of landings criteria would actually be awarded access. However, this alternative then allows anyone that was awarded a permit could have the ability to lease or buy quota from a different qualifier. So this is what makes this alternative different. So it basically increases the pool of potential participants in the general category fishery. There was an idea to consolidate, to have a consolidation cap per vessel. And you can see there's a bullet there that there was a recommendation of a 1 to 5% cap per boat. And the idea was also kind of reiterated that this alternative would retain the 400-pound possession limit for all vessels that would qualify. So this is definitely a different type of alternative. The FMAT also reviewed this alternative, and there were some suggestions and clarification things as well that are highlighted in that column on the right of document number 6. And the first one is pretty straightforward. The FMAT suggests that the purchases of quota should be in writing, and the council may want to consider recommending a fully automated system similar to what's used in the multi-species plan. So that's kind of an administrative comment from the FMAT. Another comment from them was related that wasn't really addressed in this alternative yet is whether or not buying and leasing could be from all vessel categories, or if, in fact, there will be vessel baselines, would it have to be within just, you know, your same baseline? This is something that is not clear in this alternative at this point, and the council may want to consider. And lastly, the FMAT, when they were kind of discussing this alternative, you know, this is the only one that transferability is mentioned, and I haven't been following this too closely myself, but with some of the reauthorization bills, there may be some new referendum requirements and so forth with ITQ programs that, you know, the council should be aware with this alternative, depending on the timing and if any of those bills get in before Amendment 11, just an extra complication that might have to be considered with this particular strategy. So that's about it. The only thing I want to point out, again, I'm sorry, there's one that I mistakenly, another alternative that I put in the considered and rejected section, and I went back and listened to the committee meeting, and it was a little unclear at first, but I think it's better to leave it in the document, and we can put it in the considered and rejected pile today if that's what the council decides to do. But I think it's better to leave it in this document for now. And if you go to document number 14, which is the considered and rejected alternatives, the last allocation strategy that is probably more appropriate still being considered is section 1.4.1.1.5.4, which is on page 32 of that considered and rejected document. And kind of went back. It was a little unclear in the record and from my notes, but anyway, I think there is one alternative that you would have a limited access program, and then once you have your list of qualifiers, there would be a hard tack for those qualifiers. And basically, there wouldn't be an individual allocation per boat or anything like that, and there would be a straight hard tack. While this isn't a popular alternative, it probably still is in the document, and once that hard tack is reached for just the qualifiers, the fishery would close. So please just ignore that that's in the considered and rejected section and leave it within the document. So that's probably a good place to break if anyone has specific questions or want to raise any of the issues in the right-hand column. Otherwise, perhaps this section could be approved as whole.
I'm trying to hold it to the end, is it, Dave?
Well, in light of the fact that she stopped right there, I just wanted her to help me navigate through a few of the documents, specifically with reference to the sections, one of the sections she just described, 1.1.2.4, that's allocation of access for qualifiers. This is the IFQ section. Deidre, would you help me find where in the minutes of the Scallop Oversight Committee that we had, the two-day meeting back on May 16 and May 17, where those motions are located that reference those particular decisions?
The committee meeting summary is document number 5. It's probably, unfortunately, not in one particular section. We did revisit a few of these from the first day into the second day. Just give me a second. Looks like page 8. There are several motions about the three-tiered system, the two-tiered system, and submitting several alternatives. And I believe that standalone alternative was revisited toward the end of the day.
It's a bit confusing.
Page 10.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing to go from the summary of the committee meeting to that, to the document that you've been following, because it doesn't reference the specific section numbers. That's what I've been struggling with, to find references to, you know, 1, 1, 2, 4, or any of the subsections therein.
Yeah.
And there's no reference to the word IFQ, you know, in the document that I can find so far. Hence, it becomes a bit confusing for me, who was there on the first day, and I'm sure for the audience, to get a good understanding as to the nature of the discussion the committee had on this very important part of the amendment. So you're saying page 8 has references to the motions that were made that relate to that particular section. And what other page?
Page 10, and you are right. The should be noted that the numbers referenced in the committee meeting summary are in relation to the document that the committee reviewed. So the numbers are definitely different than the numbers you're reviewing now, because if you recall at the committee meeting, we juggled the document around quite a bit. And so rather than making all the motions from the committee meeting not make a lot of sense, the numbers from the committee meeting are only going to match up the document that was reviewed at the committee meeting. But I can help you if you need.
Okay. Continue.
Okay. So that's it for qualification. The next section starts on page 9. Section 1.1.2.5, and this is related to limited entry permit provisions. So this is still within the limited entry part of the document, and if a limited entry program is adopted, there are many other permit provisions that would need to go along with a limited entry program, and that's what this section summarizes, things about vessel baselines and vessel sales and permit splitting and so forth. So over the next few pages, this is pretty standard language for other limited entry programs. It doesn't vary too much. I'll point out the sections that the committee is recommending slight variations to. But in general, these types of measures are pretty standard for limited entry programs in this region. Section 1.1.2.5.1 covers fishing history and permit transfers. Very quickly, this section really just explains that initial eligibility for a permit would have to be within the first year after implementation. So everyone would have to apply for a permit within a year. Applicants would have to submit third-party verification of landings history, such as dealer receipts. And something that was discussed at length at the advisors meeting and at the committee meeting, and it was suggested to be added, you can see the last sentence on page 9, while NIMS probably would do this anyway, it was kind of reiterated from the committee that during any sort of appeals process, if there is controversy over qualification, the council recommends that NIMS apply/incorporate VTR data with the dealer data for qualification purposes. And the background here is that because of all the issues with the data and the fact that there may be multiple trips landed together and so forth, just a reemphasis that VTR data should be considered during the qualification process if there is controversy. If you turn the page onto page 10, it's related to confirmation of permit history, similar to any other program. There is an ability to, if a vessel has sank or was destroyed, it could meet the control date eligibility and so forth. And the other section here that is different, that the committee is recommending a sort of new alternative, is related to permit history. It came up a lot during scoping that there are going to be cases where a vessel has sold basically their boat and all the permits with it, but they have documentation stating that they wish to keep the permit history from their general category permit. And this got pretty confusing at the committee level, but in general, as I understand it, for open access permits, this is complicating, and NIMS does not recognize open access history. So this came up during herring. This was a controversy during herring, and the council ended up deciding that even if there was documentation, a second permit would not be awarded to the person who had decided to keep the history. So the scallop committee reviewed this and actually developed an alternative, which is described in the middle of page 10, and they're recommending that this be considered. It's alternative 1.1, 0.2, 0.5, 0.1.1, and I'm going to just read it because this is a pretty complicated issue. And the idea of it is if a vessel owner that sells his permits to another vessel but retains the general category scallop history on the purchase and sales agreement, the seller should be able to qualify for a permit. The buyer cannot qualify under that same history. However, if the buyer qualifies under its own history after the sale but during the qualification time period, the buyer could be granted a permit as well. And we did this without a lawyer at the meeting, by the way, that motion. So that that's the alternative from the committee, and they are suggesting this as something to be considered. It came up a lot during scoping, and basically what could potentially happen is you would get two permits from one vessel if the second vessel actually fished during the qualification period as well. The FMAT reviewed this alternative and didn't have any problems with it, but they did suggest in terms of NEPA and being consistent that another alternative should be added, and I don't really think the council needs to do this because it should be really in the document anyway as a no action, but that basically an alternative that wouldn't allow this, and basically the same thing that was done with the herring plan is that one vessel could only produce one permit. So that's sort of just a suggestion to have both alternatives in there. So that was the issue with vessel history that was discussed a lot at the committee level. There's some more background in the meeting summary if you want to read about it. The bottom of page 10 gets into appeals, and this was discussed again at length. And basically the description that's in the document so far is really just a description of the default appeals process, which again is just a procedure, and it's understood there would be an appeals process. The committee discussed potential exceptions for appeals or re-rigging clauses, as well as the advisors considered this, and it was discussed a lot at all those meetings. But in the end, it was suggested from the committee that the only types of appeals that should be considered would be if there is a disagreement about the landing's qualification amount. And so anything about extensions to the control date and so forth, the committee's not submitting at this time as a favorable alternative. The next paragraph explains the appeal review process. And the next paragraph just explains that a vessel does have the right to continue fishing while their permit is under appeal. Section 1.1.2.5.2 is related to vessel upgrades. Pretty straightforward language here. Option one is that there would be no upgrade restriction. And option two is that there would be an upgrade restriction. The language is similar to the one adopted for the limited access scallop plan, and that's the 10-10-20 upgrade for horsepower, vessel length, and tonnage. So both of those would be considered. If a upgrade restriction were adopted, if you turn the page, the next section about vessel baselines explains that the vessel, when it qualifies for a permit, that would be its vessel baseline, and all of the specifications of that vessel at the time would be considered their baseline. The next section covers vessel replacements. Again, this section is consistent with other limited access programs and the different restrictions of replacing a vessel. The next section, the committee did suggest several alternatives for stacking of permits is the next section. And in general, most limited access programs do not allow stacking of permits. And the advisors considered it, and it was discussed at the committee, and it was decided to submit, actually, in addition to an alternative of no stacking, to actually allow stacking with a limit of two permits, as well as an alternative that would allow stacking but up to a specific poundage or trip amount. So these would be two additional alternatives that would be considered, unless they're taken out, of potentially stacking general category permits together. The idea was that all permits, whether it's full-time or part-time, would be treated equally. And there's just some language explaining the difference between those two alternatives. If you turn the page to page 13, the next section is pretty standard. voluntary relinquishment of eligibility. It's basically saying that a vessel does not have to get a permit if they qualify for one, and they could relinquish it with the understanding that that could not reissue another permit on a different vessel. Permit splitting. Again, the committee is forwarding that, consistent with other limited access programs, if limited entry is adopted in this plan, this permit would be considered a limited access permit just like other fisheries, and it could not be sold individually. If a vessel is selling its permits, it would have to be sold as a package. So that's consistent with the policy used in this area. The next section is permit renewals and confirmation of permit history. Again, this basically just explains that a vessel owner must maintain the limited access permit status of this permit if they are awarded one by renewing it on an annual basis, as well as if they have a confirmation of permit history, they would have to renew that on an annual basis. If you turn the page, the next section is different than other limited access programs and not always included. It's a percentage ownership restriction. So in addition to the restrictions within Magnuson Act, this would be an actual specific alternative that would restrict the maximum number of permits that a vessel owner could own. And right now, the range, it's a range, 1 to 5%. And the background about why it is a range is it's very difficult to come up with these consolidation caps before you really know the number of vessels that are going to be awarded a permit. So gone over this with the NEPA staff at the agency, and, you know, in some cases a range is okay at this point, and later down the road when we have a better sense of the alternative we would be selecting in terms of the number of vessels and so forth, those things can be detailed later. The only thing that is not in this document is the next section. If you would just kind of take your pencil and identify section 1.1.2.5.9, and this would be a section called Other Restrictions. And this came up since the committee meeting, so it's not really in the document, and I'm not suggesting an alternative, but it did come up enough, and it's something that council should probably consider or at least discuss, and I'm not going to pretend to have a good feeling for it. Hopefully people can jump in and help me, but it's related to state permits and coastal access permits. And if the council decides to go with limited entry and award permits to general category vessels, does the council want to clarify or change basically their ability to fish under state water provisions? And this came up at the committee meeting kind of, and it was related to the problem that a vessel can fish in state waters for the majority of the year, but because they only have to declare their federal permit, I think it's 30 days before the end of the fishing year, there's some flexibility in there. So it's something that the council may want to discuss if they just want to be a little more clear, or just make sure everyone's on the same page about the different state water versus federal water, since this would become a limited entry program, which is different than what it is right now. So that's basically all for the permit provisions section. Moving on. On the bottom of page 14, there are several alternatives being considered, measures to reduce the incentive for limited entry qualifiers to fish for scallops with a trawl, section 1.1.2.6. Now, when the motions were made at the committee level, all of these motions were understood to be for the limited entry program only. It could be possible to have these alternatives considered if a hard tack or something else was approved in this document, but for now they are folded underneath the limited entry program because the motions from the committee were specific to that. The first one is to prohibit a vessel from switching to net gear if they qualified using dredge gear. And this, I believe, first came from the PDT. The committee adopted it as a reasonable alternative. It's similar to what's used in the limited access scallop fishery already. There was one comment when the FMAT reviewed this alternative, and and it's kind of a technical revision, and there were people at this meeting that are very involved in the landings data and were thinking about this alternative and said that it maybe should be reworded, or at least the committee should understand one way to interpret it would be that if a vessel used dredge gear at all during the qualification, even one trip, that they should be awarded a dredge permit only, because the thinking about, okay, would these pounds count as net gear and would these pounds count as dredge gear is very problematic for figuring out a vessel's qualification. So the suggestion would be that, to kind of clarify what this really is saying, this alternative would be that if you use a dredge at all during the qualification, you should get a dredge-only permit and not a net permit. So that's the first alternative under that topic. The second alternative is to actually prohibit the use of nets in the general category fishery for all qualifiers, with an exception for vessels that are fishing on a multi-species days at sea. And this came up from the advisory groups as an alternative, and the idea here was being, supportive that it's good to reduce the number of nets targeting scallops, but there is a component that was raised that is actually targeting scallops while on a multi-species days at sea and a general category permit, and that activity should be permitted to continue. So this alternative is trying to address that. The idea being that the multi-species days at sea are limited. It's not completely, could fish every single day type of thing. There is a limited number that they're allowed to fish. The next alternative, rather than prohibiting the use of nets, would be to reduce the incentive to use them by implementing a lower possession limit. So a lower possession limit would be considered in this alternative for vessels that are targeting scallops using a net. These would be for qualifying vessels. And this alternative the committee forwarded and also requested the PDT to kind of start looking at the data to see what this lower possession limit should really be. Since the committee meeting, the PDT has started to look at some data. It's, early at this point still, and I believe we've only really been able to look at a year of it. But so far, I'm sure down the road with more time and PDT review, a lower possession limit could be identified. The PDT suggests that it be one limit and not have a bunch of different limits for different net fisheries would be too complicated. But it is possible to do, and certainly the PDT is looking into that. The next alternative is a lower possession limit for net fisheries other than the multi-species fisheries under a day-at-sea program. And this would be an alternative that would have a lower possession limit for vessels that are actually targeting other species but have a general category limited access permit. If they're targeting fluke, for example, they would have a lower possession limit. It was suggested at the committee level to be 200 pounds, but again, the PDT has started looking at some data and whether that's the appropriate number. Still need more time to actually identify that number, but certainly that's something that can be done. If you go back to document number 6, there was a comment about this alternative that I wanted to just point out. Again, the data that the PDT is pulling together is still preliminary, and but one thing we have learned from it so far is that it suggests that there are several net fisheries that land less than 400 pounds, but again, the PDT needs more time to determine what that specific poundage should be. But the other thing that was interesting of note from the data so far is that really the only component of the multi-species fishery, it was broken down into SAP programs versus just groundfish days at sea. The only component of the multi-species fishery that lands close to the possession limit is the yellowtail flounder SAP program. When you look at just the groundfish days at sea, the possession limit average for at least 2005 is significantly lower. So the council may want to consider an alternative that would have a lower possession limit for net fisheries, perhaps except for the SAP program being more appropriate based on the preliminary data that we've looked at so far. So that's all for the net-related alternatives. The next section is related to sectors, the bottom of page 15, section 1.1.2.7. And you have seen this language before. It's very similar to what was in the Herring Amendment, in the draft anyway, about implementing a program that would allow voluntary sectors to form between general category qualifiers. And the next few pages sort of summarize the process that would have to occur and the different participation limits and a description of the operations plan that a sector would have to submit. I missed the discussion yesterday, but this was sector stuff was definitely discussed. I did highlight a few questions that the council may want to clarify before submitting this document today. One is in the middle of page 16, and I believe the Herring draft of the sector program was considering allowing non-limited access vessels to participate within a sector. So the council may just want to be clear if that, in fact, is something that you'd want to consider for this fishery. On page 17 is just a description of what would have to be in an operations plan. Again, very similar. A lot of time was spent developing this for the Herring plan, and the committee's direction basically was to incorporate all that work and kind of give it a go with this fishery and incorporate all of the decisions that were made during that process. There is another thing bolded on the bottom of page 17, but really this is just a note to myself to get this answer. It's nothing that the council has to address today in terms of when a operations plan would have to be submitted. Turning on to page 18 is more just description of how a sector program could work. And it's a few examples of basically just an example. There's a section about monitoring and enforcement. Again, a lot of the responsibility is put on the sector. And just some description, again, very similar to things you have reviewed for the Herring Plan. The only last issue related to sectors that may be different from the Herring Plan that is in bold face in the middle of page 20. It wasn't really addressed in the Herring Plan more than just a description of excessive shares, but the council may want to discuss for this particular sector of the fishery if there would be a restriction for the size of the sector in terms of its share in pounds or percent, if there was going to be any kind of restriction there. It should be clarified. So that's it for sectors. The next section is something that came up at the end of the committee meeting, and it's kind of not clear, actually, if this alternative would be associated with if a limited entry program is adopted or if it isn't, if it's just kind of across the board. But the idea behind section 1.1.3 is an alternative to consider modifying the current possession limit restriction. The committee discussed this and had, you know, several comments about the 400-pound possession limit, and the recommendation from the committee is that it be a restriction but per 24-hour day. So what that means is if a vessel is out for more than one day, it could bring in more than 400 pounds. But if they were out for 2 days, it can't bring in 4 days' worth. Basically is the idea. They did put a cap on this alternative of a five-day limit, so if a vessel is out for 5 days, they would be permitted to bring in 2,000 pounds of scallops meat. But this is the alternative as it is. There weren't any, ranges of alternatives here. This was just kind of a standalone alternative. There were comments, and you can go back to the meeting summary to see the discussion around this alternative. There were some comments pro and against basically this alternative, and I encourage you to go back to the meeting summary. The next alternative is for hard tax, section 1.1.4. And the idea of this section is that if a limited entry program is not adopted in this amendment, then another way to control capacity and mortality in the general category fishery would be to implement a hard tack. There are several alternative ways to do that on page 21. The first one is to implement a fleet-wide hard tack, so a certain amount would be identified, and basically once that amount was projected to be caught, the general category fishery would close. Again, keep in mind this wouldn't change the way general category permits are given or issued. They would still be an open access fishery. Or the second alternative is a hard tack by area, quarter, or combination of the two. And this alternative has not been fully developed in terms of specific areas or quarters that could be used. And the main reason for that is since there really isn't a whole lot of support for hard tack options at this time, the committee hasn't really wanted to spend the time on actually developing them. It's understood today if there actually is more interest and support for doing it, it could go back to the committee or they could be developed during the analysis process and so forth. But the idea was that if this was a popular idea, maybe it could be incorporated in the future rotational management area strategies and so forth. The next alternative is a hard tack, but on an individual basis. And what that means is basically at the beginning of the year, there would be a tack for the general category fishery. You would know the number of participants that have a permit. You would give them a certain amount of tack, basically, and when each person caught their tack, that would be it. A little problematic with this one to figure out which vessels are included. Would it be the current permit holders when Amendment 11 is implemented? There's just some things that need to be a little more clear with this alternative. The next section is the monitoring provisions section. And the committee discussed monitoring for a decent amount of time at the committee meeting. And at the end, it was suggested that all these vessels that are landing more than 40 pounds currently do have VMS, but they are not required to report their landings through VMS. So if a hard tack option were adopted or one of the limited entry options, the suggestion is that a vessel should be required to report their landings through VMS as well and also declare that they're going on a general category scallop trip through the VMS when they're leaving dock. The FMAT reviewed this. We do have no enforcement on the FMAT team, and there was an additional technical suggestion from the FMAT. You can see back in the right-hand column that the FMAT also suggests that vessels should have to report their hail weight, being a little more specific than the alternative, before passing the demarcation line. And their suggestion is to also consider requiring a VTR number. And this would really help the monitoring of quota if it can be linked more quickly to the VTR data. So that was a suggestion. The next alternative is in bold because it was not a committee motion. It came up after the committee meeting. The PDT was reviewing all of these alternatives and trying to be creative, thinking of more alternatives for monitoring provisions besides the one that the committee submitted. There was some discussion about requiring all scallops in the general category fishery to be in bags and to have them marked, some sort of bag tag or an actual marking. The PDT did discuss this for a while. And as well as the FMAT considered this idea as well. And a lot of issues did come up and problems in the fact that there is no approved tag at this time, and a lot of times bags are split open very quickly, and it wouldn't really help with enforcement. So I don't want to really get into all the pros and cons unless someone in the committee the council wants to actually add this as an alternative, but just to be clear, this is not an alternative at this time. I just have it in here to let you know that the PDT was trying to be supportive of the idea, but understands that there may be some issues since there, is no approved tag at this time. Okay, section 1.1.6 is related to whether or not limited access vessels should be permitted or prohibited from landing scallops under general category rules. Currently, they are permitted to do so with their limited access permit. This section would consider alternatives to allow the continuation of that as well as to prohibit it. The first alternative would be to permit all limited access vessels to continue that activity. However, they would have to qualify under the same qualification criteria that the general category vessels would. So that would be the 100-pound trip or the 1,000 pounds annually and so forth. So that was an alternative under this section. The next alternative is to permit limited access vessels to continue this activity, however, only for part-time and occasional permitted vessels. So it would exclude full-time vessels from continuing that activity, whether they qualified or not. One note from the FMAT that you can see in that other document as well, when the FMAT reviewed this alternative, they just wanted to point out so it was clear that currently VMS is not required for occasional limited access vessels, so it would have to be added as a restriction, a new requirement for occasional vessels to be consistent with the rest of the general category limited access program. The last alternative under this section would be to prohibit all limited access vessels from fishing under general category rules, and that is whether they qualify or not, it doesn't matter across the board. None of the permit types would be permitted to fish under general category. The next section is related to if limited access vessels are permitted to fish under general category, those pounds have to be deducted from somewhere, and where should they be taken out of? The first alternative suggests that those pounds be removed from the general category section of the TAC. And the second alternative suggests that those pounds be reduced from almost a separate TAC that would be set up just for limited access activity under general category rules. So we would go back and kind of look at the qualification criteria for those vessels and determine, roughly looking at historical data, it's somewhere around 0.5% of the total would be sort of a separate allocation just for that component of the fleet. The next section the council has already discussed at the April council meeting. It's related to the first decision we made about Amendment 11, which is you have this overall total scallop TAC, and this amendment is considering actually allocating a portion of that TAC to the general category sector and a portion of it to the limited access sector. So there would be the no action, of course, that would analyze not doing that. And then the second alternative on page 23 is to consider a range of 2.5 to 11% of the total would be allocated to the general category sector. And again, this is what we discussed at the April Council meeting, and the next few paragraphs explain the rationale that the Council provided in April for that range. The next section is something that came up during development of this plan, which is pretty complicated, but it's basically if you have a limited entry program for the general category sector, do you just allocate that overall, or is this amendment actually going to consider specific allocations for open areas as well as access areas similar to the limited access fleet? So this was discussed at length at the advisor meetings and the committee meeting, and in the end, two alternatives are being suggested. The first one is the no action, and this one would basically be that each framework that sets up specifications for the scallop fishery would identify a specific range per access area for the general category fleet, and with the understanding that it could be a variable amount per area, meaning it doesn't have to be 2%, although that's what the council has done in the last few frameworks. It could be anywhere from 0 to, who knows. So it could be a variable percent per area. That would be the no-action alternative, as long as those different percentages were analyzed in that particular framework. The second alternative would be that, you make this decision to allocate 2.5 to 11% to the general category sector overall, should that be carried over to each access area as well? So this alternative would look at actually whatever alternative the council selects in the previous decision, this would be the same. So, for example, if they select 2.5%, then It would also be understood that the general category sector would receive 2.5% in the access programs as well. A lot of problems have come up about this alternative. They were discussed at the committee meeting and other meetings. You know, if it's a far offshore area and a large percentage is allocated to the general category sector, can that many vessels really go out there? Is that feasible and so forth? So there have been some issues identified, but at this stage, it's in there for analysis. The next section also came up during development related to the yellowtail flounder bycatch tack within the access areas. And it started out as a discussion of, okay, there's this 10% TAC that's set aside as bycatch for the scallop fishery. And at the time, it was thought that this was just for the limited access fleet because they're the only ones that can land it. But it was explained that actually the bycatch is monitored on both the limited access fleet as well as the general category fleet, and they are considered together part of that 10% cap. So it came up during the discussions, is that appropriate? Should they, each sector of the fishery, have their own tack so that one component of the fishery does not close another component of the fishery? So there is an alternative in the document that would allocate a proportional allocation of the 10% yellowtail flounder bycatch to the general category fishery. Again, whatever percentage is allocated in the earlier discussions, for example, 2.5%, then the general category fishery would be awarded 2.5% of the yellowtail flounder cap. However, keep in mind, the committee and no one else is suggesting that the general category fishery should also be allowed to land that. They are not permitted to land the yellowtail currently, and this alternative would not permit them to now do that. It would just be part of the bycatch tack, and if it were reached, then the general category component of the fishery would close. The PDT reviewed this alternative. There are some comments on the bottom of the page, some concerns that they have about increased monitoring needs if this is broken out in this fashion. Again, those are just noted down there. Getting there. Section 1.1.8 is related to incidental catch. There were several different alternatives related to incidental catch originally in the document that have been moved to the considered and rejected section, which you can review in that other document, number 14. The only one that really remains, because the committee listened to the scoping comments overall, as well as comments from the PDT, that incidental catch is not really a big threat in terms of mortality, so this wasn't identified as a major scoping issue and something that had to be changed. So the suggestion from the committee is that there only be, it's not really even an alternative since it's the no action, but the suggestion is that there be no change to the incidental catch rules. It remained 40 pounds per trip, and vessels would not be required to have VMS. So that's about it for incidental catch. Catch up here. Okay, the last section is section 1.2, and this is related to goal number 2 of the amendment, which is to allow better and more timely integration of recent data. This section was discussed mostly at the first committee meeting. There haven't been too many changes to this in a while, but there would be the no action alternative, of course, and specifically meaning that the fishing year would remain at March 1st. The PDT did have a suggestion that if the no-action alternative is selected, one way to improve integration of the fishery data would be to at least change the issuance date of the general category permit, which is currently May 1st, and make it consistent with the scallop fishery, which is March 1st. So that's what that alternative is about. The next alternative would be to change the start of the fishing year to May 1st rather than March 1st. So this alternative would be analyzed as a way to help improve integration of recent data. And the only note about this one, these aren't very fully developed in terms of description, so I just want to elaborate a little bit. This alternative would be most ideal if the scallop survey is moved. and there's been some discussion of bumping it up a bit into late spring, early summer. So if that, in fact, occurs, this alternative would be most compatible with that. There's another alternative to change the start of the fishing year to August 1st, and this, again, would be an improvement for analysis purposes and integrating recent data if the survey remains where it is, which is late summer. Okay, those are all the alternatives. The last page really is just a place mark in case there's anything that we identify that should be identified as something that could be changed in a framework. If the council's not comfortable that anything is in there now that we may want to do in a framework action, it's just here to remind you we can add things to that with this amendment. And again, the considered and rejected alternatives have been summarized in a separate document, number 14.
Okay, thank you, Dee. You lost me on the top of page 4. Could you start over again? Okay, a lot of information there. Okay, to the council, questions on the what we have in front of us?
Yeah,
Tom?
Yeah, I think
we got a notice or a note from the hotel that people have been sneaking food from other people's receptions. So if we can keep that down and keep us from getting thrown out of here, please don't. If there's any food out in the hall or other places, it's not from the New England Council. So try not to get us thrown out.
You mean that bagel I had earlier? I think it's accurate to say that the FMAS process has raised several issues, a number of issues, about what is being proposed by the committee and ultimately by the council. The council has, I think, the opportunity to look at the document and determine whether it has a full range of alternatives. I think that's the primary discussion today, is whether the range of alternatives is complete. The secondary discussion and decision will be whether the council decides whether it wants to spend time today itself figuring out the answers to some of these details that are raised. It'll relegate that back to the committee, and then once the committee has finished answering the what I'll call the fine points that have been raised by the FMAS discussion, then forward the document on to the staff to begin the development of the EIS. So just a couple of thoughts as you're thinking about comments and questions. It would seem to me it would be helpful if we be sure that we focus on our primary role today, which is whether the range of alternatives that has been developed is sufficient for the public, for the development of the EIS and ultimately the public hearing process.
Well, given Tom's comment, I think depending on what the council decides, I would approach this differently. Then I do have several either questions or comments on different sections, but if the committee is going to deal with some of the details at a later date, I could probably leave. I'm seeing not sure staff is completely comfortable with that, but I could leave some of those to a later date. So maybe we want to decide the approach first.
Okay.
Or do you want me to just go through and we can decide whether...
Why don't you tell us where your major concerns are, and maybe that'll help guide us on where we're going to go.
Well, there's... I wouldn't call anything a major concern, but, for example, starting on page 6, 1.1.2.3.2, the average of the best 3 years. I think in addition to the question that the PDT or the FMAT is asking with respect to the qualification time period, then there needs to be some thought about the partial year. There's the year with the control date in it is only a 10-month period. That's going to, by definition, bring a lot of the averages down. And so it's not actually a real allocation of years, and especially if you're using a two-year period, in one case you've only got one full year and then a partial year. So some of those kinds of things still need to be thought through. I think Deirdre wants.
If I could, Frank, just a very quick response to that. The committee was aware of that and kind of very purposely truncated the last fishing year to only be 8 months. They were clear about that. And we also discussed later in the committee meeting, should that shorter year be prorated at all to have it equal to a 12-month? And it was discussed at the committee level, and they decided not to do that, continuing to recognize that, you know, if you only were in the last 8 months, that's your fishery, and that's what your qualification would be based on. The FMAT did discuss this, not that it was a problem or that they disagreed with that policy decision, but they made a recommendation there could be something else looked at that could be a vessel's best 12 months, not necessarily in a particular fishing year or not.
Well, okay. It clearly says in the one above that the landings will not be prorated, so it needs to be clearer under the averages. And I do think in some ways this makes several of the options under this just don't make sense, frankly. So that needs to be thought through. My next issue would be under the individual – well, actually it's under several sections in here, but it first occurs under individual fishing quotas. And I understand exactly why this was done. The whole discussion is based on an allocation that then is scaled depending on the yield in the fishery. I think in the long run it would be much less confusing to the public and less confusing when the council gets to making decisions on this that the discussion instead be done in terms of a percentage, that the allocation is a percentage. And I understand that is difficult because the council hasn't yet made the decision between whether or not there's an allocation between the general category and the limited access category. But nonetheless, in the end, it ends up being that individuals receive a percentage of something. And I know it seems like a small point, but I actually think it's quite important in the end for people to understand how this is going to work. Should I just go on? And we're going to go back at some point to look at the PDT comments, I assume, because of, for example, the things that the comment they made under individual fishing quotas, under equal allocations, that the trips don't make sense. We'll go back to that. Okay. Under that section, it also speaks to the allocation would be based on the average pounds per vessel in the tier. Need to think through whether that means the vessels that originally qualified, in other words, the vessels that we know today qualify based on the information that's in the database, are the vessels that ultimately qualify, or is it being done on an annual basis? If it's, I assumed anyway from reading this that it's based on the vessels that ultimately qualify. And if that's true, then we've got a problem with timing because, of course, they have a full year to qualify. So what happens in year one? So just a little problem there. I think, as Deirdre noted, some of these others need some additional fleshing out. Let's see. This is good. I'm skipping ahead now. Let's see. Okay. Actually, in several of her comments, I think she addressed some of the other issues I had. And I want to say I think that Deirdre and the PDT have done a great job of laying this out, thinking through a lot of these issues, making it very understandable, and being very comprehensive about this. I'm struggling. This is a question. I'm struggling with the discussion under measures to reduce incentives for limited entry qualifiers to fish for scallops with a net, and in particular the three options on page 15. If I understand it, the first one only allows multi-species vessels, landings when they're fishing with a net. The second one allows anyone who's fishing with a net some possession limit. And then the third one allows, and I'm sorry, I'm not even going to try to guess. I don't really understand what the third one allows.
The third one would have a reduced possession limit for net fisheries, except the multi-species fishery. If you're fishing with a net and you're on a multi-species days at sea, you would not be restricted by the reduced possession limit.
So it's the same as the second one, except that there's different possession limit for multi-species versus other fisheries.
Yep, you could say that way, or there's just basically a lower possession limit for all other net fisheries.
Okay. I would just say I'm not quite sure why we'd be treating multi-species differently than anybody else under these options. Let's see. And then there are others that at some point I would actually suggest that we drop all together, and so I'll wait till you want to do that kind of a action. You take that kind of action within the process. Under monitoring provisions, I don't have a good sense either of whether or not this VMS option, what enforcement's reaction might be to it, and whether or not this is a viable option. My suggestion would be that we also include an IVR option, just so that we have them all in there, and we can consider the pros and the cons during the public hearing process.
Pat, if I could just interrupt you, so you
yes.
can refer to it. IVR was considered as an option, and it's in the considered and rejected section, but certainly it could be brought back in. But it is
okay.
there.
So we need a motion to move it. Okay. Under the limited access section, limited access vessels qualifying under the general category rules, just to note that limited access vessels don't have general category permits. So for the option that says they qualify under the qualifying criteria here, just have to be clear they were qualifying with their limited access permits. Okay. And the and under the landings from this sector, the section that talks about having the 0.5% on top of the whatever the general category allocation might be, it's not clear whether the intention is that that be tracked separately, and I'm using tracked as sort of a monitored on a real-time basis versus we would, after the fact, somehow split out the how much of the landings were from limited access vessels and how much were for general category vessels. And I would think it would be quite difficult to justify some sort of real-time tracking of a 0.5% percentage rate. Under the section on that deals with the access areas, I guess my question would be whether or not we could do this in Framework 19. This is something that could be addressed in Framework 19 and reduce the complexity and some of the issues that are being handled in this amendment. It seems like we've got a process in place under Framework 18 anyway that that could serve in the interim, and that there's an opportunity here to, one, take some more time to think this through as well as deal with it overall when we deal with the next set of access allocations under the next framework. And I think that might be it. And then I do, as I said, I have some other more sort of issues with some of the sections, but those were my questions anyway. Thank you.
Okay. Relatively few questions. We should be able to deal with those by lunchtime. Dave, you...
I've got a question about range of alternatives. Just to make sure I understand exactly what is being offered up by the committee. I'm a member of the committee. I missed the second day. I had another commitment I couldn't break, and a lot happened on the second day, as I thought it would. Some of my confusion, I think, that I've had this morning comes about because I was referencing for the longest of times the document that we received at the committee meeting, and as Deidrin indicated, it's numbered differently, so it threw me off and up in a major way. It seems to me, and I need to be corrected if I'm wrong, that the only option, the only alternative that we're bringing, that we potentially will have in this amendment will be IFQs for general category fishermen. Am I correct? Because I look at 1124, allocation of access for qualifiers, and this all goes with the assumption that we will have limited access for general category permit fishermen. That's, I think, pretty clear. That was why we went to public hearing, I suspect, one of the major reasons. So with that understood, it seems that 1.1.2.4 says, and this is a committee decision, IFQs, that's it. And I'm sensitive to this because of the discussion we had yesterday from those who came back from their field trip to New Zealand, and they're describing the IFQ process there in New Zealand. We had a lot of debate about that. Am I wrong? Is that the only alternative we have to deal with the general category fishermen? It's IFQs.
You're correct in section 1.1.2.4. There are those three strategies with IFQ, and then there's the one with ITQ, and then remember I noted at the end there's one that's currently in the considered and rejected section that should more appropriately be here, which is actually limited entry plus a hard tack. So you would have your qualifiers as well as a hard tack. So that's all within limited entry, and then the document also has alternatives for just hard tack fleet-wide by area or individual. So
the limited entry for general category fishermen with a hard tack, that was an alternative that was rejected by the committee?
It was my mistake of putting it in there. It was a little back and forth and confusing from my notes, but I did review the tape. And it should be not considered and rejected. It should be still in the document, and that's what I tried to mention before. You should reinsert section from the considered and rejected document, section 1.4.1.1.5.4, which is on page 32. That should not be in the considered and rejected section. It should be still in the document, and that's a hard tack for all qualifiers.
Okay, that clarifies things and gives me a greater sense of ease because this is something going to public hearing as an amendment. We need to have more alternatives than just an IFQ. So it is there then, and that needs to be clarified. And you did, Deidre, that we would have as an alternative another option to the IFQ. We would have limited access for the general category fishermen, and then they would be fishing potentially on a hard tack. That's notwithstanding questions about areas and quarters and ways to make sure the hard tag isn't taken quickly or by one particular geographical location. Okay. All right. So with that clarification, Deidre, then we need to be careful with the document number six, because when we get to the section that describes hard TACs, that's on page 4, as it stands right now in this document and in the bigger version, the one that you've described in great detail and very well, I might add. This particular hard TAC, as worded now, only gets considered as an option if we decide not to have limited access for general category fishermen. That's the way it's worded now. And that's not correct because you just clarified that, right? Because potentially there is an option here that would be a hard TAC for all general category fishermen who get the limited access, right?
Yes, but if I could, rather than complicate section 1.1.4, that whole section is designed to be an alternative to limited entry, so it would be best to have a separate section if limited entry is not selected, to have several hard tacks. Instead, on page 6, again, because I realized this later, on page 2 of document 6, I'm sorry, under 1.1.2.4, where all the alternatives are for IFQs, it would be more appropriate there to add an alternative in the middle of that page that says 1.1.2.5, and that would actually be limited entry plus a hard tack to have it there.
Okay. Anybody else on the council? Dave?
Yeah, I had a question regarding, actually it comes up in two places. One is under the uses of a net for to catch scallops, and the other is under the bycatch caps. Any of these going to supersede current regulations, or are these only in areas where these occur now? In other words, for example, in the Gulf of Maine, you can't use a net to target scallops. Is this going to allow that? And the other is under bycatch, the same thing. There is no bycatch in the Gulf of Maine right now. You're not allowed to possess anything when you're fishing for scallops under the general category. So is this proposing to allow some kind of bycatch cap for yellowtail?
The bycatch cap alternatives are just for the access program, not out in outside areas.
Okay, thank you.
Jim Salisbury? Jim? Next. Okay, go ahead.
This may be my own problem, but I'm confused by the use of the word sector. I thought of a sector being a general category, and as I run through this document, I see the word sector used in various contexts of allocations to sectors and then deduction from sectors, and they mentioned part-time and incidental permits all being identified as sectors, and so I wonder if there needs to be a clarification of what a sector is. And then, of course, there's the part of the alternatives for the formation of a sector. So all of that leaves me a little confused as to the definition of what a sector is and how it's going to be treated.
Paul, do you want to?
Might be beneficial in the document to use the new NIMS language, LAPP. So when you're talking about a different gear sector, just use sector. But if you're using a dedicated access privilege type program, do sector and then put LAPP next to it.
Does that help, Peter?
No. I think so. I'm still having a little trouble putting the whole scheme together in my mind as to how the sector works, but that might help.
Okay. Jim, are you ready?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I agree with the committee chairman's earlier comments that there may be benefit to be had by returning this to the committee, but I think if we were to do that, and including some of Pat's comments, I think the council needs to give fairly specific direction, and I don't want to get into saying 1.2.1.5 and working the details, but I think we need to give the committee some direction of the things we would like to see either included or fleshed out or that sort of thing. And in that regard, I think there are two points that I would like to have the committee consider. And the first one would be that in the considered but rejected document, 1.4.1.1.2, in that document, there was a proposal that was supported by the scallop advisory panel that would make the years, the qualifying years would be considered from May 1st, 1994 through November 1st, 2004. And that basically coincides with the period of time that the general category scallop fishery was established up to the control date. And the reasons for it being rejected, according to the document, were essentially that the shorter periods that were in there were sufficient, and that it might include too many participants, and that it's not desirable to take away from active vessels and give to vessels that have not been serious about scallop fishing in one of the last 5 years. And I think that rationale is flawed because there are scenarios that if that option were available, there are further in the documents scenarios that could, if chosen, limit significantly the number of participants, and they could also address the issue of taking away from active to give to inactive. For example, if everybody were to get an allocation that's proportional to whatever they did, you certainly haven't taken away from active and given to inactive because the inactive would only gotten what they had had. So I think that our document needs to be expanded to include this kind of an option. And I think just to look at the years that were included, you have two options, basically one that covers a year and 8 months, and the second option that increases that by another 2.5 years approximately. And it doesn't really give you the ability to include a significant component of the fishery. It tends to provide you a way of either getting more or less of the people who were very active in a very few years, a larger or a smaller number. And what I think that's important in the general category is that you have the general category was established to be a part-time seasonal fishery and an augmentation to other fisheries, and by choosing those limited years, you basically exclude the participants that might have dropped in, dropped out, had smaller landings, but over a long period of time as a seasonal fishery. And so I think it's important that we include that kind of an option in the range of options. The second issue that I'd like to address is that there was discussion.
Hey, Jim, just before you go, this was more for questions on what's here. It sounds like you're getting into debating what we're going to go with the document. So hold those, because I think that's going to be a motion to make, especially the first one. I'm not sure what your second one is, but the first one.
Well, my understanding was that we were discussing how, in fact, to deal with the overall issue, namely, are we going to go approve?
Haven't quite got there yet. Right now, we're just making sure that we understand the document and what we have.
All right.
We haven't really decided on whether we'll go back to committee or we've got time today. I don't know how long everybody plans on staying, but if the council wants to sit and flush it out, we can sit and flush it out as long as we want. We can, like Tom said, we can give it back to the committee, or the worst-case scenario is come back and do it at another meeting, which I hope we don't get down to. But so.
All right. Then I'll hold these for later.
Okay, hold that for because I think you've got some very good points, and I don't want to. So anybody else on questions?